Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hello and welcome to the Spike Podcast. I'm Fraser Myers, and with me this week, we have Spike's editor, Tom Slater.
Hello.
And the director of the Equiano Project, Inaya Falarin Iman.
Hi.
Loads to discuss on the podcast today. We'll bring you the latest from the general election, including the shock entry of Nigel Farage. Plus, we'll talk about the lawfare against Donald Trump and the Islamist stabbing in Mannheim in Germany. Nigel Farage made a huge announcement this week, really setting the cat amongst the pigeons. He has taken over as the leader of the Reform Party and is going to stand for Parliament for a seat in Clacton. Inaya, you've ran as a Brexit Party candidate in the last election. I mean, I know the Brexit Party is a slightly different beast to the Reform Party, but what do you think Nigel's announcement might mean for this election? Could it really, you know, change things potentially?
I think it will change things. I think, you know, at least when I stood for the Brexit Party in 2019, you know, that was a particular single issue campaign. But the reason that it became such a defining election around Brexit was because, as many of us know and have spoken about, so many people in the political establishment tried to overturn the vote, the biggest expression of democracy, you know, in a generation. And part of that vote was to transform the political and economic settlement to make our political leaders much more sensitive to the concerns and interests of the populace. And the realization that so many communities had been decimated over the last few decades and very little had been done about it. And so, lo and behold, you know, 5 years later, sadly, the aspiration of Brexit has not really been realised. And I think that's why the space is still open for figures. One of them may well be Nigel Farage, why he's standing, to really speak to those concerns. Mm. And I think, you know, the last few years has been one of the biggest missed opportunities, disappointments. And we see with Keir Starmer versus Rishi Sunak that there is not really much to offer. So in terms of Nigel Farage, he obviously was umming and ahhing. He probably thought that, look, I've got a cushy job. You know, I've stood many times. You know, maybe I should just leave it. But actually, I think the space is really open for a figure to really shake things up in this election campaign.
Definitely. And it's almost like it's not even as if we've gone back, you know, 5 years to 20 or 4 years to 2019. You know, it's like we've gone back to 2015, pre-Brexit, certainly in terms of how the old parties are fighting amongst each other. It feels like it's almost 2015 again with Cameron versus Miliband.
Exactly. And then Farage coming into the fray. I mean, it's interesting. So he's standing in Clacton in Essex, which is also a very significant seat in the sort of history of British Euroscepticism, of course. You know, that was the seat that the then Tory MP Douglas Carswell held when he defected in 2014. He held it at the 2015 election when UKIP got 4 million votes, but only one seat, voted 70% to leave, but also is a very deprived part of the country. You know, it's only a couple of hours from London, and yet it's amongst the sort of top 1% most deprived parts of the country. So really kind of telling a story of people who have really not done well out of the new kind of political and economic settlement of past recent years, and really seizing that opportunity of the referendum to hit back at the establishment. So it's quite significant that he stood there. And it's a reminder that there is obviously so much fertile ground for another populist revolt. The thing that has been lacking is any outlets for it or any charismatic individuals. I think it's welcome that Farage has stirred it up. I do lament the fact that it's falling not just to one kind of right populist party, but actually just one individual in order to make any of our elections interesting at that point. And I think it speaks to the sort of supply and demand problem where voters who are kind of populism interested in that issue, interested in democracy, but just the lack of outlets often for them to express that.
Yeah.
Just on Tom's point, which I think is a really important one about, you know, the tragedy in a sense that you know, Farage is seemingly one of the only people. I mean, when you take Clacton, I actually visited Clacton a few weeks ago because it has some of the highest proportion of people in the country that are economically inactive, and not just people that have retired, but young people. It was particularly harmed by the expansion of kind of cheap foreign travel. These former seaside towns, and had never really recovered, and very few political leaders have really tried to come up with a economic strategy to revive these areas. And so a lot of people have effectively just been left on the economic scrap heap. And when it comes to Nigel standing, you know, this area is 95% white, and he is obviously making immigration a really big issue, and I think it is a really big concern for people. But the sad thing about it is that there's a whole bigger challenge. It's not just the question of immigration. It is the fact that the way that our economy is currently structured that doesn't really get to the root cause of these issues. And so we need a broader populist revolt that addresses these political and economic questions.
And that kind of stuff just isn't even on the radar, because if you look at the official figures, you know, the government will say, well, there's no one. Practically, we're at full employment. Unemployment's low. We need, you know, more people to come and join the workforce. And yet we know, you know, there are vast swathes of the country that have essentially been written off.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this is the frustrating thing about the immigration discussion. And I think Nigel, you know, puts it at the top of the agenda. But it does speak to a deeper economic question about the fact that we have created an economy where we depend on cheap foreign labour. And that also at the same time when millions of people in the country are on welfare, which could work, just need the training and the investment opportunities to give them well-paid, high-skilled jobs. And as you mentioned, these questions, these big questions about our economy and the future of our society are just not on the agenda.
Yeah. Tom, I mean, how much do you think it could move the dial potentially? You know, we've had a couple of weeks where the polls haven't really moved, even despite, or maybe because of, Rishi Sunak's kind of policy blitz. Big announcement, you know, eye-catching announcement after another, from sort of national service to migrant quotas to sort of lesser things like fly-tipping crackdowns. Those things, the main two parties don't seem to have had any sway on.
I'm as surprised as you are by the failure of that. The old call of eye-catching policies to turn it around for them. I mean, what's particularly interesting in the last couple of days is, or in the last 24 hours even, the polls that have come out that suggest the gap between Reform and the Tory party is something like 2 percentage points. Both YouGov and Redfield and Wilton put out very similar numbers, where you've got the Tories on about 19%, which is, you know, extinction level anyway, really, for them. And Reform creeping up at 17%. There's another poll supposedly coming out this evening while we're recording, which is being talked up. I don't necessarily know what's in it yet. So people are openly talking about now whether or not one genuine big change that would come as a consequence of this election would be the destruction of the Conservative Party as a viable electoral proposition anytime soon. There's been a lot of comparisons in recent months to 1997, and that being the sort of parallel, because of the sense that you've got a centrist Labour leader who's about to lay waste to a pretty pathetic and all over the place Tory party without any ideas, John Major and Tony Blair, Keir Starmer and Rishi Sunak. But a lot of people certainly in kind of right of centre commentary, have been talking about another example, which is 1993 in Canada.
Yeah.
We had the Progressive Conservative Party, it was then known, went from being in government to having just two seats because a party to their right, also called Reform, funnily enough, essentially took the fight to them. And they eventually ended up merging a decade later. So it's been interesting to see Farage speak very explicitly about this, saying you can't really land the argument that a vote for Reform is a vote for Keir Starmer. Keir Starmer is going to win anyway. And his view is very much on what does the right of Tory of British politics look like at the end of this? And he's got his eyes very much on the next election as much as this one, it seems like.
We should talk a bit about some of the campaign. I mean, the debate this week seemed particularly uninspiring between the two leaders. I mean, it was interesting that Rishi Sunak and Keir Starmer seemed to really be quite angry at each other. You know, there was a lot of hostility, despite the fact that they are really not that different. You could barely put a cigarette paper between their policies. Is this just is it the narcissism of small differences like working itself out? Well, maybe
I honestly think it is. I mean, that's the way that they feel they can differentiate each other, by basically being snidey and aggressive rather than getting deep into what makes them different, which is very little. But honestly, that was one of the most stiff, dull, boring, quite painful to watch debates. I mean, it was just, there was nothing about a alternative big vision for society. There was nothing inspiring or exciting that really made you want to make a positive vote for a particular agenda. It was really quite a sad indictment about where we are in society.
Definitely. And Tom, one of the fallouts from the debate has been this oft-repeated Tory claim that Labour are going to put £2,000 of extra tax on your tax bill. I mean, that's been disputed. It seems like a load of bullshit, frankly. But there's been almost like a hysteria to the response.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Labour have just been saying Rishi Sunak is a liar. You know, you see this word lie, lie, lie all the time.
Especially because, first of all, some slightly inflated figures put out by a political party in the midst of an election is hardly the most outrageous and brand new thing that we've ever seen.
Yeah.
I think it's particularly hypocritical in the context of the fact that Labour are continuing to hammer their own nonsense claim statistic about the Conservatives, which is that they're going to abolish national insurance basically immediately to the tune of £30 or £40 billion, which is not Tory party policy, in the same way that the only way that they seem to have managed to generate this £2,000 per household figure is by, again, just adding things to that calculation which aren't Labour policy either. So
and spreading it over 4 years, which I thought was interesting.
£500
times four, which, you know, by that measure, someone on the minimum wage could say I'm on 90 grand.
Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous, but at the same time, we've come to expect this, and it is just the sort of thing where it's odd that there's very selective outrage about dodgy statistics depending on who they're coming from, I suppose.
Yeah. Interestingly, though, I actually was quite surprised that Keir Starmer couldn't land more blows against Rishi Sunak.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought whether that is the fact that, you know, the pay packet that people have is totally shrunk compared to what it was years ago. Obviously, all of the fallout around lockdown and COVID and the total destruction of their target when it comes to immigration numbers, really record levels. Blair has nothing on what's happened over the last few years. And it was just shocking that even so many open goals for Keir Starmer to really hammer home with Rishi Sunak, just because he hasn't got that authority, he hasn't got that real analysis of the problem, that it was just flat.
Well, yeah, I mean, and Tom, you've made this point in, you know, your video earlier this week that people should check out on Keir Starmer. I mean, we don't know. Does he know what he thinks? I mean, you know, one of the things he criticised Rishi Sunak for was being the most liberal prime minister ever on immigration, but he campaigned for freedom of movement. So you just don't know where you stand.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a single issue almost. It feels like that Keir Starmer hasn't expressed almost entirely contradictory positions on. Like, as you said in this video we put out this week, we sort of provided the receipts on various different things that he said, whether it was Brexit, whether it was gender, whether it was eco-activist protest, just all of these things he's completely flip-flopped on. In a way, I think it was interesting the things that he felt a bit firmer about, and you touched on this in your write-up of the debate. First of all was the question of the ECHR. That was kind of the point in which, you know, the ability of a foreign court to dictate our internal affairs is something that he clearly quite strongly believes in for sort of legalistic reasons. And the other one is that even if his, you know, own grandmother was dying, he wouldn't pay for her to go private, which I thought was interesting. But beyond that, I really think he is someone who you can only conclude that either doesn't believe in anything or is willing to say almost anything in order to get elected. And I'm still not entirely sure which one is worse.
Yeah, definitely.
You even see it with, I think, one of the ones that amused me today is the, or this week was the nuclear weapons that, you know, Labour is now committed to. And both Angela Rayner and David Lammy, like, voted against renewing Trident. So even whatever people think about nuclear weapons, it's just hilarious that they have flip-flopped on absolutely every issue over the last 10, 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, Lammy, another good example. You know, a couple of years ago saying Brexiteers are worse than Nazis, now saying, you know, I respect the Brexit referendum.
Amazing.
We should go back to Clacton briefly before we move on to more substantial issues. This is Nigel Farage getting, I guess, an unwelcome gift from an angry local. So, Tom, that's the first milkshaking of the campaign. I say the first because, you know, in the European elections a couple of years ago, this was a whole trend of this. So, you know, could we see more of it? What have you made of this and the reaction to it?
Well, it was interesting. First of all, it was good to see, you know, all the political parties sort of condemn it because you don't want to get in a situation where people have kind of treated as fair game in that respect. You don't really know what someone is lunging you at when they're carrying something like that. But at the same time, I think it was also interesting the way it sparked this kind of conspiratorial response as well, which also happened in 2019 when both Farage and also some other Eurosceptic politicians, right-wing politicians, got milkshaked, where there was this almost immediate thing on kind of left liberal Remainer Twitter where they started basically suggesting it was an inside job. You saw that in 2019 where both when Farage got milkshaked, you had people like James O'Brien openly speculating that he might have arranged for it to happen to him.
Yeah.
You know, even so far as getting a local kind of Antifa activist in Newcastle to work as a deep double agent for years before going on to commit this. There was even like a Brexit party like teller, like a kind of...
Like an old man.
Elderly man who was milkshaked at a polling station, I believe, during the European elections. And you had people openly claiming that he'd done it to himself in order to gin up some sort of sympathy for him. And the same thing
Alistair Campbell said, we have no proof that it even happened.
Yeah.
So he knows about dodgy dossiers and you know.
I saw one that was claiming that that's not even milkshake. That looks like yogurt to me. Like they were going over this photo like it was like frames from the Sapruda film or something. It's very funny. And then this time around, the idea got about Twitter that the young woman who had milkshaked him was actually Emily Hewitson, who's like a sort of pro-Brexit activist. And that became a thing for about 24 hours with people who are not just nobodies on the internet, like actually go, you know, like they're not just some sock puppet account. They were actually relatively prominent tweeters who should have known better, just openly repeating that. So yeah, the capacity for like Remainer conspiracy theory stuff is always interesting. And the fact it's come back again is quite telling, I think.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates not available in all states. Potential savings will vary. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Right, so last week, Donald Trump was found guilty of all 34 counts of falsifying his business records. Inaya, I mean, depending on someone's point of view, you either think this is, you know, a great moment, a great strike for justice, that nobody is above the law, or you see it, in my view, rightly, as an outrageous attack on the rule of law and on democracy. I mean, how do you see it?
I mean, I just think it is disgraceful. Like, I mean, Donald Trump is far from an angel and you know, far from a perfect human being. But it is clear that these investigations, these legal troubles that he has been under, is fundamentally politically motivated. And it is a way to prevent voters really from being able to have a choice in the election by attempting to remove a particular candidate almost by stealth. And what it has done has, of course, played into Donald Trump's idea that he is essentially being politically persecuted, that he's a victim of the deep state and the establishment. And it is really bolstering his support. And I think understandably, because at the end of the day, what we are seeing is really a form of political persecution, where it is this relentless attack on him. And what is just interesting is that when it came to, for example, Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, we actually had literal social media companies preventing stories from even going round, and that any kind of scrutiny about Joe Biden and his family. But when it comes to Donald Trump, then there is an entire infrastructure that has galvanized in order to clamp down on him. And it is very interesting when you really do see actually, you know, his the polling and the vote share. One of the things is that I think spiked his written about that is fascinating, that his polling amongst African-Americans and Latin Americans is really just shooting up.
Yeah.
And, you know, part of that is because they resonate with many of the frustrations of every other American person. But I think they also see this attempt to take away their vote, to patronize them, and to frame Donald Trump in a way that doesn't really reflect the reality. So I think it's just another example that will only further bolster his cause.
Yeah, I mean, Tom, there were some polls, you know, before the verdict suggesting that independents would not want to vote for a convicted criminal. But I think, you know, a lot of independent-minded, non-aligned people do see this as a stitch-up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And I think you've seen that in a lot of the response to it. I think people were quite unsettled by this. Mm. I could easily see a situation in which it would still dampen his prospects because of the fact that it's a reminder of the drama, if nothing else, and whatnot. But at the same time, I think a lot of people who, if they weren't just sort of committed anti-Trumpists, looked at this and thought this is something at the very least very fishy. And I think it is important to say, even though, you know, this has been pointed out many times, not just on Spikes, but obviously in American commentary, but just how questionable, particularly this indictment was.
Yeah.
This was effectively kind of falsifying business records. That was what they want. That was the crime that had been allegedly committed, which normally would just be a misdemeanor, sort of, and certainly wouldn't be something so serious that you would haul a presidential candidate through the courts over. But via all these like legal acrobatics, the Manhattan district attorney, who was elected on a get Trump ticket effectively, basically inflated them into felonies by this weird theory that by trying to pay off this porn star, his alleged mistress, that this was effectively a form of election interference. It was this whole incredibly complicated, overwrought indictment, which even when it was published at the time, you saw the sort of legal writers from left of center American outlets like Slate and Vox referring to it as a bit shaky and dubious.
Yeah.
So the fact that this is what they've got him on, which was often talked about as the weakest of all of the indictments that were presented to him, I think has unsettled a lot of people and demonstrated just the extent to which the justice system has been brought into democratic politics. How much it has been weaponized. And I think particularly in a context where Trump is pitching, as he did in 2016 and 2020, to working class Americans, to people who have been kind of pushed out, left out of the political discussion for a long time, that argument of if they can do this to me, they can do it to you too, will resonate as a consequence of all of that.
And there's a sort of irony, isn't there, that you know, Trump famously in the 2016 election got people to chant lock her up about Hillary Clinton. Now, that was never really a serious threat. But the Democrats have actually done the thing that they were terrified that Trump would do. The thing that, you know, had he done it to his opponents, would be a sign that he's literally Hitler and the most authoritarian leader that we've ever had.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this is what is kind of worrying about it, because for all we know that, you know, if Trump does get elected, then he will have lots of people in his supporters, you know, angling for the similar thing to happen, you know, against their political opponents. And they've essentially laid this groundwork. And, you know, we saw this even during Trump's time, that so much was prevented from being done because of these false accusations of him colluding with Russia.
Yeah.
And it took so much political energy from American live that it was he was almost incapable of being able to do anything because he was blocked. But you saw this similar thing when it comes to, you know, Trump's, what I think, outrageous claims that he didn't lose the election. Mm. But we know that, you know, Hillary Clinton effectively said the same thing when she lost.
She's still saying it. And she says the next one's going to be stolen as well.
So it's now just becoming this kind of back and forth when actual the real issues facing American society are completely sidelined because of this anti-democratic warring that you're seeing from the Democrats. But as we said, the Republicans may well end up doing the same thing in response.
Yeah. And it I mean, I suppose it is, as you say, you know, the actual issues are being sidelined because as polling shows that most Americans don't want to vote for either Trump nor Biden, even if Trump is, you know, edging things at the moment.
No, absolutely. I think that's one thing that's always worth remembering. I think it's talk about terrible choice. You know, you've got one one side pointing out that one of them is now, technically speaking, at least a convicted felon, and the other side pointing out that the gentleman on the other side of the aisle is barely conscious most of the time. There's actually some Wall Street Journal reporting this week about even people within Joe Biden's own circle kind of saying that, oh God,
yeah,
he's really losing the plot now.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, he was on stage for these D-Day celebrations in France and with Macron, and he could barely walk. You know, this is actually really quite...
It's like elder abuse.
It's quite disturbing.
Free that, Joe Biden.
This is not some kind of just cheap political point. Yeah. It is absurd that the leader of one of the most important countries in the world at a time of, you know, geopolitical antagonisms and all of these different hostilities we're seeing globally can barely string a sentence. I don't think that that's very good for America's authority and reputation at the moment.
With new McValue at McDonald's, you get more than you expect. So after a long day, buy a double cheeseburger and add a McChicken for a dollar. Because saving with deals is always on the menu with new McValue.
Prices and participation may vary. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.
So let's talk about this terrible stabbing in Mannheim in southwestern Germany. Five people are injured. A policeman was killed by an Islamist. The suspect is believed to have come from Afghanistan in 2014. The reaction to it has been, certainly from the German political class, and I think throughout the rest of Europe, to be fair, has been quite muted, alarmingly muted. And this is often the case when there are Islamist attacks, or at least suspected Islamist attacks.
Exactly. I mean, at first it was interesting that there was this reflex to try and generalize what was going on. So even the fact that some of the evidence would point towards a potential Islamist motivation, you've now got the sort of justice minister in Germany now suggesting that that might well be the case. But at first it was very much statements from the chancellor, from the president, saying things to the effect of there's a climate of too much hatred and toxicity in public life at the moment, as if the problem was that too many arguments around the European elections were getting out of hand on social media, and therefore this is the natural consequence of that. A willful ignorance, a attempt to downplay what could quite clearly be the motivation here. And I think particularly this comes in the context of only a few weeks ago now, there was that foiled Islamist attack in Germany, or at least it was being planned to try and basically sort of stab and assault Jewish people.
Yeah.
There was also that foiled Hamas-linked attack in Germany back in December, I think, which has kind of been totally forgotten about now. But in Germany, there was these plotters who were apprehended. So this is quite clearly a near and present problem. There's been a lot of talk about the potential terror threat in the run-up to the Euros, the tournament.
Yeah, and the Paris Olympics as well.
Exactly.
So it's not foiled.
Like this isn't something which is a real pressing issue. And yet, not unlike we've had in our own discussions of Islamist terrorism in the UK, there's just an attempt to try and suggest that it's just a byproduct of the toxicity in public life rather than a very specific political, religious, intolerant threat.
And it's interesting in this case. I mean, there's been almost a defaming of the victims. I mean, the person attacked a rally for a group called Pax Europa, this anti-Islamist campaign. And, you know, a lot of the headlines would say stabbing at far-right rally, you know, one of the victims called a xenophobe and an Islamophobe, as, you know, as if to say they brought it on themselves rather than, you know, being able to look this Islamist problem in the eye.
I mean, I remember almost a similar thing happened with the Charlie Hebdo attacks when in France, when there were some people were saying, well, some of their cartoons were, you know, Islamophobic and racist. And I mean, it's really quite sickening stuff. And I think, you know, I really try and think about why is it that the political elite are so uncomfortable and unable to confront such an important issue, you know, that affects everybody in society, that you have what appears to be a sizable and potentially growing number of people that not only dislike their society, loathe it, despise it, and want to cause people serious harm. If there's anything that the state is meant to do, presumably it is to keep us, you know, safe from threats. And this threat is not just a physical threat, it is an ideological threat. Some really shocking statistics that the highest per capita young Muslims relative to their population that went to join Islamic State was Finland, then Belgium, then Ireland, and then Sweden. You know, these aren't countries that are riddled with hate and racism and marginalization. Actually, these have huge economic and social development and huge opportunities for people. And I think it's such an abdication of responsibility to citizens, but particularly Muslim individuals who want to live free, happy lives, to essentially allow these hardcore ideologues to recruit and get off scot-free when it comes to public debate. And I think that I think that's a real tragedy. And I think it is, I think it's devastating that the political class continue to refuse to look this in the face.
And I think it's interesting, you know, the countries you've named, none of them are Islamic countries. It's not people from Morocco or Algeria going off to join Islamic State necessarily, or things like that. So to me, that suggests, you know, there needs to be something deeper, a deeper discussion than, you know, often the right wing response is just, well, let's just deport more people. It's just immigration. We can't have people coming from XYZ country.
Yeah.
It's not quite.
No,
right.
There is a particular form of Muslim identity politics that seems to develop in the West that is intersects with a lot of the grievance politics that you see across the board, a lot of the rhetoric, particularly, you know, within liberal institutions that encourage people to feel ashamed of their society. And there may well be very real alienation about being a minority, you know, in historically, you know, ethnically homogenous societies. And as you mentioned about a lot of Muslim countries, you know, I think there are lots of different ways in these countries to be a Muslim. And actually oftentimes, you know, that the dominant sense of what it means to be a Muslim is a moderate type. But I think for a lot of young Muslims today, there are seemingly few options, and the most vocal option, which seems to tell young Muslims what it means to be that identity, is a Islamist hardcore option. And I think that that is something that needs to be tackled within society.
Tom?
At the same time, I have been struck by the speed with which the migration part of the debate has tried to be shut down in Germany.
Yeah.
So the German Greens are going to come out and say, anyone who's trying to suggest that we should, you know, tighten up our rules as a consequence of this is, you know, stirring up hate and weaponizing this issue and so on. And it's the politicians of all stripes need to take this question a lot more seriously, because we have had a spate of terrorist attacks across Europe, which have been perpetrated either by migrants or by people who were trying to settle as refugees. We've certainly seen that in the UK with the Hartlepool attack recently, which has kind of been completely forgotten about now. But a guy who was floating around Europe for years and years and years ends up in the UK, again, kind of rejected by all kinds of different countries on the basis that he was seemingly up to no good in his native Morocco, and ends up stabbing a fellow asylum seeker in the northeast of England because he was inspired by October the 7th, and this gentleman had converted to Christianity. So there was all these sorts of cases which float up, raise very serious issues about questions of security, of vetting and so on, which really do need to be tackled if we're going to take the Islamist threat seriously. And also if we're going to take some of the heat out of the migration and asylum debate, because as soon as these things feel like they're so lax to the point where even really nefarious individuals who really want to do harm to existing citizenry can exploit them, it's very difficult to get an argument going about why we should be generous in relation to something like asylum or migration or anything else. So the refusal to deal with that piece of the puzzle as well, I think, will only come back to bite a lot of these supposedly more liberal pro-migration, pro-asylum parties in the long run.
I know that Spiked has a more liberal position. I mean, I'm quite critical about mass migration. But I think, just to Tom's point, I think the inability to have a frank discussion about it is actually producing much more hardline responses, you know, from the right, even in the UK. I mean, even it's interesting looking at some of Reform's policies net zero migration. I think the SDP called for a moratorium. Mm. And these actually weren't things we were really hearing. You know, before 10 years ago, people said, you know, we need to bring it down to the tens of thousands. You know, the pace and scale is too fast and too high. But because we have not been able to have a conversation about it, or at least promises about reducing it have been completely ignored.
Yeah.
Then I think we are seeing more absolutist positions.
Mm.
And I do think that this is the kind of tragic irony of the political class, that by virtue of refusing to have this important conversation about migration, I think they are actually creating conditions for much more resentment. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I really do worry about that.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.